Chapter 7 Maria Theresa 1953-1958, 1953, Tuesday morning, December 15th, Phyllis says Rain, I feel like dying myself. I can't believe she came to the funeral mass with her girls, adding four more slaps to her big blow. One of them looked to be only a few years younger than me, so you couldn't really say, hey, poor papa, he lost it at the end and went behind the palm trees. He was bringing down coconuts when he was good and hearty and knew what he was doing. I asked Minerva who invited them. All she said was they were papa's daughters too. I can't stop crying. My cute cousins Raul and Brito are coming over, and I look a sight. But I don't care. I really don't. I hate men. I really hate them. Wednesday evening, December 16th, here I am crying again, ruining my new diary book Minerva gave me. She was saving it up for my Epiphany present, but she saw me so upset at Papa's funeral, she thought it would help me most now. Minerva always says writing gets things off her chest and she feels better, but I'm no writer, like she is. Besides, I swore I'd never keep a diary again after I had to bury my little book years back. But I'm desperate enough to try anything. Monday, December 21st, I am a little better now. For minutes at a time, I forget about Papa and the whole sad business. Christmas Eve, every time I look at Papa's place at the table, my eyes fill with tears. It makes it very hard to eat meals. What a bitter end of the year. Christmas Day, we are all trying. The day is rainy, a breeze keeps blowing through the cacao. Phyllis says that's the dead calling us. It makes me shiver to hear her say that after the dream I had last night. We had just laid out Papa in his coffin on the table when a limousine pulls up to the house. My sisters climb out, including that bunch that call themselves my sisters, all dressed up like a wedding party. It turns out I'm the one getting married, but I haven't a clue who the groom is. I'm running around the house trying to find my wedding dress when I hear Mama call out to look in Papa's coffin. The car horn is blowing, so I go ahead and raise the lid. Inside is a beautiful satin gown, in pieces. I lift out the one arm, and then another arm, then the bodice, and more parts below. I'm frantic, thinking we still have to sew this thing together. When I get to the bottom, there's Papa, smiling up at me. I drop all those pieces like they're contaminated and wake up the whole house with my screams. I'm so spooked. I wonder what it means. I plan on asking fella who knows how to interpret dreams. Sunday afternoon, December 27th. Today is the feast day of San Juan Evangelista, a good day for fortunes. I give fella my coffee cup this morning after I'm done. She turns it over, lets the dregs run down the sides, then she reads the markings. I prod her. Does she see any novios coming? She turns the cup around and around. She shows me where two stains collide and says that's a pair of brothers. I blush, because I guess she can tell about Brito and Raul. Again, she slowly rotates the cup. She says she sees a professional man in a hat. Then, a Capitolino, she can tell by the way he stands. I am at the edge of my seat, smiling in spite of these sad times, asking for more. You'll have to have a second cup of coffee, Senorita, she says, setting the cup down. All your admirers can't fit in one cup of fortune. Brito and mate? Mate and Raul? Forever? Ojo de Agua, Salgado, December 30, 1953, 23rd year of the era O Trujillo Generalissimo Dr. Rafael L. Trujillo benefactor of our country, illustrious and well-loved Fef, knowing as I do, the high esteem in which my husband Enrique Mirabal held your illustrious person, and now somewhat less confounded by the irreparable loss of my unforgettable companero, I write to inform your excellency of his death on Monday, the 14th day of this month. I want to take this opportunity to affirm my husband's undying loyalty to your person and to avow that both myself and my daughters will continue in his footsteps as your loyal and devoted subjects. Especially now, in this dark moment, we look to your beacon from our troubled waters and count on your beneficent protection and wise counsel until we should breathe the very last breath of our own existence. With greetings from my uncle, Sheikh, I am most respectfully, Mercedes Reyes de Mirabal. Wednesday late afternoon, December 30th, Mama and I just spent most of the afternoon drafting the letter T.O. Sheikh suggested she write. Minerva wasn't here to help. She left for Jericoacoa 3 days ago. Teofilo dragged her off right after Christmas because he found her very thin and sad and thought the mountain air would invigorate her. Me, I just eat when I'm sad and so I lick the picture of health, as Teofilo put it. Not that Minerva would have been much help. She is no good at the flowery feelings like I am. Last October, when she had to give her speech praising El Jefe at the Salcedo Civic Hall, guess who wrote it for her? It worked too. Suddenly, she got her permission to go to law school. Everyone's in a while Trujillo has to be buttered up, I guess, which is why Teo should thought this letter might help. Tomorrow I'll copy it in my nice penmanship, then Mama can sign it with her signature I've taught her to write. Sunset, I ask Fella, without mentioning any names, if she has something I can use to spell a certain bad person. She says to write this person's name on a piece of paper, fold it, and put the paper in my left shoe because that is a foot Eve used to crush the head of the serpent. Then burn it, and scatter those ashes near the hated person. I'll sprinkle them all over the letter is what I'll do. What would happen if I put the name in my right shoe? I ask Fella. The right foot is for problems with someone you love. So, I'm walking around doing a double spell, Rafael Leonidas Trujillo in one shoe, Enrique Mirabal in the other. Thursday night, December 31st, last day of this old sad year, I can write the saddest things tonight. Here I am looking out at the stars, everything so still, so mysterious. What does it all mean, anyway? I don't like this kind of thinking like Minerva likes. It makes my asthma worse. I want to know things I don't even know what they are. But I could be happy without answers if I had someone to love. And so it is of human life the goal to seek, forever seek, the kindred soul. I quoted that to Minerva before she left for Jericoacoa. But she got down her gems of Spanish poetry and quoted me another poem by the same poet, May the limitations of love not cast a spell on the serious ambitions of my mind. I couldn't believe the same man had written those two verses. But sure enough, there it was, Jose Marti, dates and all. Minerva showed me her poem was written later. When he knew what mattered. Maybe she's right, what does love come to, anyway? Look at Papa and Mama after so many years. I can write the saddest things tonight. 1954, Friday night, January 1st, I've been awful really. A young girl deluded with her father fresh in the ground. I have kissed beyond lips. He caught my hand and led me behind a screen of palms. Oh horror! Oh shamelessness! Oh disgust! Please make me ashamed, oh God! Friday evening, January 8th, R dropped in for a visit today and stayed. I knew he was waiting for Mama to leave us alone. Sure enough, Mama finally stood up, hinting that it was time for people to be thinking about supper, but R hung on. Mama left, and R lit into me. What was this about B? Kissing me? I was so mad at B for telling on us after he promised he wouldn't. I told R that if I never saw his face or his silly brothers again, it was perfecto with me. Sunday afternoon, January 10th, Minerva just got back with a very special secret. First, I told her my secret about B and she laughed and said how far ahead of her I am. She says she has not been kissed for years. I guess there are some bad parts to being somebody everybody respects. Well, maybe she has more than a kiss coming soon. She met somebody very special in Jericoacoa. It turns out, this special person is also studying law in the capital, although he's 2 years ahead of her. And here's something else he doesn't even know yet. Minerva is 5 years older than he is. She figured it out from something he said, but she says that he's so mature at 23, you wouldn't know it. The only thing, Minerva adds, real breezy and smart the way she can be so cool, is the poor man's already engaged to somebody else. Two-timer. I still heard so much about Papa. He can't be a very nice man, I tell Minerva. Give him up. But Minerva's already defending this gallant she just met. She says it's better he look around now before he takes the plunge. I guess she's right. I know I'm taking a very good look around before I close my eyes and fall in true love. Thursday, January 14th, Minerva is up to her old tricks again. She wraps a towel around the radio and lies under the bed listening to illegal stations. Today she was down there for hours. There was a broadcast of a speech by this man Fidel, who was trying to overturn their dictator over in Cuba. Minerva has big parts memorized. Now, instead of her poetry, she's always reciting, "Condemn me, it does not matter. History will absolve me." I am so hoping that now that Minerva has found a special someone, she'll settle down. I mean, I agree with her ideas and everything. I think people should be kind to each other and share what they have. But never in a million years would I take up a gun and force people to give up being mean. Minerva calls me her little petty bourgeois. I don't even ask her what that means because she'll get on me again about not continuing with my French. I decided to take English instead, as we are closer to the USA than France. Hello, my name is Mary Marable. I speak a little English. Thank you very much. Sunday afternoon, January 17th, Minerva just left for the capital to go back to school. Usually I'm the one who cries when people leave, but this time, everyone was weepy. Even Minerva's eyes filled up. I guess we're all still grieving over Papa, and any little sadness brings up that bigger one. Did and Jaimito are staying the night with Jamie Enrique and baby Jamie Raphael. Jaimito always brands his boys with his own first name. Tomorrow we'll head back to San Francisco. It's all settled. I'm going to be a day student and live with Deed and Jaimito during the week, then come home weekends to keep Mama company. I'm so relieved. After we got in trouble with the government and Papa started losing money, a lot of those nose-in-the-air girls treated me awfully. I cried myself to sleep in my dormitory cot every night, and of course, that only made my asthma worse. This arrangement also helps Deed and Jaimito too, as Mama is paying them for my boarding. Talk about money troubles. Those two have had bad luck twice already, what with that ice cream business, now with the restaurant. Even so, Deed makes the best of it. Miss Sunrisa, all right. Saturday night, February 6th, home for the weekend. I've spent all day getting everything ready. Next Sunday, the day of lovers, Minerva comes to visit and she's bringing her special someone she met in Jarabacoa. Manola wants to meet you, Minerva wrote us, and then added, for your eyes only, you'll be pleased to know he broke off his engagement. Since I'm the one who reads all our mail to Mama, I can leave out whatever Minerva marks in the margin with a big eye. I'm probably messing up our whole privacy system because I'm teaching Mama to read. I've been after her for years, but she'd say, I just don't have a head for letters. I think what convinced her is Papa's dying and me being away at school and the business losing money and Mama having to mind the store pretty much by herself. There was talk at the dinner table of Deed and Jaimito moving back out here and running things for Mama. Deed joked that they've got a lot of experience with ailing businesses. Jaimito, I could tell, didn't think she was one bit funny. There's going to be a scene when we get back to San Fran. Sunday morning, February 14th, we're expecting Minerva and Manolo any minute. The way I caught sit still, Mama says, you'd think it was my own beau coming. Dinner is all in my hands. Mama says it's good practice for when I have my own house. But she's begged me to stop running everything by her as she's losing her appetite from eating so many imaginary dinners in her head. So here's my final menu. Bear in mind today is the day of lovers and so red is my theme. Salad of tomatoes and pimientos with hibiscus garnish, polio a la criolla, cots of tomato paste in my San Valentin version, Moore's and Christian's rice, heavy on the beans for the red-brown color carrots. I'm going to shape the rings into little hearts, arrows con lush, because you know how the song goes, arrows con lush wants to marry a clever girl from the capital who sues. Who darns who puts back her needle where it belongs. Night, Manolo just loved my cooking. That man ate seconds and thirds, stopping only long enough to say how delicious everything was. Mama kept winking at me. His other good qualities, let's see. He is tall and very handsome and so romantic. He kept hold of Minerva's hand under the table all through the meal. As soon as they left for the capital, Dad and Mama and Patria started in making bets about when the wedding would be. We'll have it here, Deed said. A.C., it's final, Deed and Jaimito are going to move back to Ojo de Agua. Mama's told them they can have this house as she wants to build a more convenient modern one on the main road. That way she won't be so isolated when all her little chickens have flown. Just my baby left now, she says, smiling at me. Oh, diary, how I hate when she forgets I'm already 18. Monday night, February 15th, back in San Fran. One, keep hoping that someone special will come into my life soon. Someone who can ravish my heart with the flames of love. Gems of mate mirable. I try to put together the perfect man from all the boys I know. It's sort of like making a menu. Manolo's dimples, Raul's fairy tale blue eyes, Berto's curly hair and smile, Erasmo's beautiful hands, Federico's broad shoulders, Carlos's nice fundillos. Yes, we girls notice them too. And then, that mystery, something that will make the whole, as we learned in mathematics, more than the sum of these very fine parts. Monday night, March 1st, San Fran. As you well know, diary, I have ignored you totally. I hope this will not develop into a bad habit. But I have not been in a very confiding mood. The night after Manolo came to dinner, I had the same bad dream about Papa. Except when I pulled out all the pieces of wedding dress, Papa's face shifted, and it wasn't Papa anymore, but Manolo. That started me worrying about Manolo. How he went after Minerva while he was still engaged. Now he's this wonderful, warm, loving man, I say to myself, but will that change with time? I guess I've fallen into suspicion, which Padre Ignacio says is as bad as falling into temptation. I went to see him about my ill feelings towards Papa. You must not see every man as a potential serpent, he warned me. And I don't really think I do. I mean, I like men. I want to marry one of them. Graduation day. Philly 3 diary, I know you have probably thought me dead all these months. But you must believe me, I have been too busy for words. In fact, I have to finish writing down TFA's recipe on a card so I can start it on my thank you notes. I must get them out soon or I shall lose that proper glow of appreciation one feels right after receiving gifts one does not need or even like all that much. Tia Flores made a to-die dreaming cake for my graduation party. It's her own special recipe inspired by the drink. She hauled me into my bedroom to have me write it down, so she said. I had praised it over and over, in word and, I'm afraid, indeed. A, C, two pieces, and then some. My hips, my hips. Maybe I should rechristen this to die fat cake? In the middle of telling me about beating the batter until it's real. Foamy, make it look and feel like soap bubbles. She told me, suddenly, straight out, she says, we've got some talking to do, young lady. Sure, Tia, I say in a little voice. Tia is kinda big and imposing and her thick black eyebrows have scared me since childhood. I used to call them her mustaches. She says Berto and Raul aren't like brothers anymore, fighting all the time. She wants me to decide which one I want, then let the other one go eat tamarinds. So, she says, which one is it going to be? Neither one, I blurt out because suddenly I see that what I'm headed for with either one is its mother-in-law. Neither one. She sits down on the edge of my bed. Neither one? What? Are you too good for my boys? Didin Chimito, my favorite perfume, Matador's Delight. Also, an IOU. For the new Luis Alberti record when we next go to the capital. Minerva. A poetry book by someone named Gabriela Mistral. And a pretty gold ring with an opal, my birthstone, set inside four cornerstone pearls. We have to get the size fixed in the capital. Here's a drawing of it, Manolo, an ivory frame for my graduation picture. And for your final boo when the time comes. He winks. I'm liking him a lot more again. Tia Pepe and Tia Flor, Raul, Berto. The cutest little vanity table with a skirt the same fabric as my bedspread. Tia made the vanity and Tia sewed the skirt for it. Maybe she's not so bad, after all. As for Raul, he offered me his class ring and wanted us to be novios. Soon after, Berto cornered me in the garden with his, Wednesday afternoon, July 7th, thank you's not yet written. Magnet lips. I told them both I wanted them at friends, and they both said they understood. It was too soon after Papa's death. What I didn't tell either of them was that I met this young lawyer who did my inheritance transfer this Friday, Justo Gutierrez. He's so kind and has the nicest way of saying, sign here. Patria and Patrido, a music box from Spain that plays four tunes. The battle cry of freedom, my little sky, there is nothing like a mother, and another I can't pronounce, it's foreign. Also a Saint Christopher's for my travels. Tio Tilo and Tia Eufemia, Maria, Milagros, Marina, seashell earrings and bracelets that I would never wear in a thousand years. I wonder if Tia Eufemia is trying to jinx me so her three old maid daughters stand a better chance? Everyone knows seashells keep a girl single, everyone except Tia Eufemia, one guess. Mama, a monogrammed suitcase from El Gallo for taking to the capital. It's settled. I'm going to the university in the fall with Minerva. Mama also gave me her old locket with Papa's picture inside. I haven't opened it once. It spooks me on account of my dream. She has transferred my inheritance to my name. $10,000. I'm saving it for my future, and of course, clothes and more clothes. Even Fella gave me a gift. A sachet of magic powders to ward off the evil eye when I go to the capital. I asked if the Felsa worked as a love potion. Tono heard me and said, somebody has a man in her life. Then Fella, who delivered me and knows me in and out, burst out laughing and said, a man. This one's got a whole cemetery of them in her heart. More heartbroken men buried in there than, they've both grown careful since we found out about the art boy Prito. Yes, our trusted Prito has been reporting everything he hears in the Mirabal household down at security for a bottle of rum and a couple of pesos. Tiosha came and told us. Of course, we can't fire him or that would look like we have something to hide. But he's been promoted. So we told him, from the yard to the hog pen. Now he hasn't much to report except oink, oink, oink all day. Friday night, full moon, July 9th, Justo Maria Gutierrez, Don Justo Gutierrez and Donna Maria Teresa Mirabal de Gutierrez meet and just ago, forever. Saturday night, September 18th, tomorrow we leave for the capital. I'm debating, diary, whether to take you along. As you can see, I haven't been very good about writing regularly. I guess Mama's right, I am awfully moody about everything I do. But there will be so many new sights and experiences and it will be good to have a record. But then again, I might be too busy with classes and what if I don't find a good hiding place and you fall into the wrong hands? Oh diary dear, I've been so indecisive about everything all week. Yes, no, yes, no. I've asked everyone's opinion about half a dozen things. Should I take my red heels if I don't yet have a matching purse? How about my navy blue scallop neck dress that is a little tight under the arms? Are five baby dolls and nightgowns enough, as I like a fresh one every night? One thing I was decisive about. Justo was kind and said he understood. I probably needed time to get over my father's death. I just kept quiet. Why is it that every man I can't love seems to feel I would if Papa hadn't died? Monday afternoon, September 27th, the Capitol. What a huge, exciting place. Every day I go out, my mouth drops open like the Campesino in the joke. So many big elegant houses with high walls and guardias and cars and people dressed up in the latest styles I've seen in Vanidades. It's a hard city to keep straight, though, so I don't go out much unless Minerva or one of her friends is with me. All the streets are named after Trujillo's family, so it's kind of confusing. Minerva told me this joke about how to get to Park Julian Lina from Carretera El Jefe. You take the road of El Jefe, cross the bridge of his youngest son to the street of his oldest boy, then turn left at the avenue of his wife, walk until you reach the park of his mother and you're there. Every morning, first thing, we turn to El Foro Publico. It's this gossip column in the paper signed by Lorenzo Ocumers, a phony name if I ever heard one. The column's really written over at the National Palace and it's meant to serve notice to anyone who has been treading on the tail of the rabid dog, as we say back home. Minerva says everyone in the whole capital turns to it before the news. It's gotten so that I just close my eyes while she reads me the column, dreading the mention of her name. But ever since Minerva's speech in Mama's letter, and my shoes fell, we haven't had any trouble with the regime. Which reminds me. I must find you a better hiding place, diary. It's not safe carrying you around in my pocketbook on the street of his mother or the avenue of his little boy. Sunday night, October 3rd, we march today before the start of classes. Our sigils are stamped when we come back through the gates. Without those stamped sigils, we can't enroll. We also have to sign a pledge of loyalty. There were hundreds of us, the women all together, in white dresses like we were his brides, with white gloves and any kind of hat we wanted. We had to raise our right arms in a salute as we passed by the review stand. It looked like the newsreels of Hitler and the Italian one with a name that sounds like fettuccine. Tuesday evening, October 12th, as I predicted, there is not much time to write in your pages, diary. I am always busy. Also, for the first time in ages, Minerva and I are roommates again at Don Escholito's where we board. So the temptation is always to talk things over with her. But sometimes she won't do it. All, like right now when she is pushing me to stay with my original choice of law. I know I used to say I wanted to be a lawyer like Minerva, but the truth is I always burst out crying if anyone starts arguing with me. Minerva insists, though, that I give law a chance. So I've been tagging along to her classes all week. I'm sure I'll die either of boredom or my brain being tied up in knots. In her practical forensics class, she and the teacher, this little owl-like man, Dr. Balliker, get into the longest discussions. All the other students keep yawning and raising their eyebrows at each other. I can't follow them myself. Today it was about whether, in the case of homicide, the corpus delicti is the knife or the dead man whose death is the actual proof of the crime. I felt like shouting, "Who cares?" Afterwards, Minerva asked me what I thought. I told her that I'm signing up for philosophy and letters tomorrow, which according to her is what girls who are planning to marry always sign up for. But she's not angry at me. She says I gave it a chance and that's what matters. Wednesday night, October 13th, this evening we went out for a walk, Manolo and Minerva, and a friend of theirs from law school who is very sweet, Armando Groen. When we got down to the Malecon, the whole area was sealed off. It was that time of the evening when El Jefe takes his nightly paseo by the seawall. That's how he holds his cabinet meetings, walking briskly, each minister getting his turn at being grilled, then falling back, gladly giving up his place to the next one online. Manolo started joking about how if El Jefe gets disgusted with any one of them, he doesn't even have to bother to send him to La Piscina to be fed to the sharks. Just elbow him right over the seawall. It really scared me, him talking that way, in public, with guards all around and anybody a spy. I'm just dreading what we'll find in El Foro Publico tomorrow. Sunday night, October 17th, El Foro Privado. Seen walking in El Jardin Botanico unchaperoned Armando Groen and Maria Teresa Mirabal mate and Armando, forever. He put his arms around me, and then he tried to put his tongue in my mouth. I had to say, no. I heard from the other girls at Don Escholito's that one has to be careful with these men in the capital. Monday morning, October 18th, I had the dream again last night. I hadn't had it in such a long time, it upset me all the more because I thought I'd gotten over Papa. This time Armando played musical faces with Papa. I was so upset I woke up Minerva. Thank God, I didn't scream out and wake up everyone in the house. How embarrassing that would have been. Minerva just held my hands like she used to when I was a little girl and was having an asthma attack. She said that the pain would go away once I found the man of my dreams. It wouldn't be long. She could feel it in her bones. But I'm sure what she's feeling is her own happiness with Manolo. 1955, Sunday afternoon, November 20th, Ojo de Agua, diary, don't even ask where I've been for a year. And I wouldn't have found you either, believe me. The hiding place at Don Escholito's was too good. Only when we went to pack up Minerva's things for her move, did I remember you stashed under the closet floorboards. Today is the big day. It's been raining since dawn, and so Minerva's plan of walking to the church on foot like Patria did and seeing all the campesinos she's known since she was a little girl is out. But you know Minerva. She thinks we should just use umbrellas. Mama says Minerva should be glad. Since a rainy wedding is supposed to bring good luck blessings on the marriage bed, she smiles, and rolls her eyes. She is so happy. Minerva is so happy. Rain or no rain, this is a happy day. Then why am I so sad? Things are going to be different, I just know it, even though Minerva says they won't. Already, she's moved in with Manolo at Dona Isabel's, and I am left alone at Dona Shalito's with new boarders I hardly know. I never thought I'd see this day, Patria says from the rocking chair where she's sewing a few more satin rosebuds on the crown of the veil. Minerva at 29 was considered beyond all hope of marriage by old-fashioned people like my sister Patria. That one married at 16, remember? Gracias, Virgencita, she says, looking up at the ceiling. Gracias, Manolo, you mean, Minerva laughs. Then everyone starts in on me, how I'm next, and who is it going to be, and come on, tell, until I could cry. Sunday evening, December 11th, the Capitol. We just got back from marching in the opening ceremony for the World's Fair, and my feet are really hurting. Plus, the whole back of my dress is drenched with sweat. The only consolation is that if I was hot, Queen Angelita must have been burning up. Imagine, in this heat wearing a gown sprinkled with rubies, diamonds, and pearls, and bordered with 150 feet of Russian ermine. It took 600 skins to make that border. All this was published in the paper like we should be impressed. Manolo didn't even want Minerva to march. She could have gotten a release too, since she's pregnant, yes. Those two are not waiting until she's done. But Minerva said there was no way she was going to let all her companeers endure this cross without carrying her share. We must have marched over 4 kilometers. As we passed Queen Angelita's review stand, we bowed our heads. I slowed a little when it was my turn so I could check her out. Her cape had a fur collar that rode up so high, and dozens of attendants were fanning her left and right. I couldn't see anything but a little, pouty, sort of pretty face gleaming with perspiration. Looking at her, I almost felt sorry. I wondered if she knew how bad her father is or if she still thought, like I once did about Papa, that her father is God. 1956, Friday night, April 27th, the Capitol, my yearly entry. I cannot tell a lie. If you look considerably slimmer, diary, it's only because you have been my all-purpose supply book. Paper for letters, shopping lists, class notes. I wish I could shed pounds as readily. I am on a vast diet so I can fit into my gown for the festivities. Tomorrow I go over to Minerva's to work on my speech. Saturday afternoon, April 28th, the Capitol, Honorable Rector, professors, fellow classmates, friends, family, I'm really very touched from the bottom of my heart, Minerva shakes her head. Too gushy, she says. I want to express my sincere gratitude for this great honor you have conferred on me by selecting me your Miss University for the coming year. The baby starts crying again. She's been fussy all afternoon. I think she has a cold coming on. With rainy season here, everyone does. Of course, it could be that little Minu doesn't like my speech much. I will do my very best to be a shining example of the high values that this, the first university in the New World, has instilled in its 400 years of being a beacon of knowledge and a mine of wisdom to the finest minds that have been lucky enough to pass through the portals of this inspired community. Minerva says this is going on too long without the required mention of you-know-who. Little Minu has quieted down, thank God. It's so nice of Minerva to help me out with as much as she has to do with the new baby and her law classes. But she says she's glad I came over. It's kept her from missing Manolo, who couldn't make it down for Monte Cristi again this weekend. But most especially, my most sincere gratitude goes to our true benefactor, LFF Rafael Linares Trujillo, champion of education, light of the Antilles, first teacher, enlightener of his people. Don't overdo it, Minerva says. She reminds me it's going to be hard crow to address after this Galindez thing. She's right too. The campus is buzzing with the horror story. Disappearances happen every week, but this time, it's someone who used to teach here. Also, Galindez had already escaped to New York so everyone thought he was safe. But somehow El Jeffy found out Galindez was writing a book against the regime. He sent agents offering him a lot of money for it. $25,000, I heard, but Galindez said no. Next thing you know, he's walking home one night, and he disappears. No one has seen or heard from him since. I get so upset thinking about him, I don't want to be a queen of anything anymore. But Minerva won't have it. She says this country hasn't voted for anything in 26 years and it's only these silly little elections that keep the faint memory of a democracy going. You can't let your constituency down, Queen Mate. We women at this university are particularly grateful for the opportunities afforded us for higher education in this regime. Minerva insists I stick this in. Little Miner starts bawling again. Minerva says she misses her poppy. And almost as if to prove her mother right, that little baby girl starts up a serious crying spell that brings Donna Isabel's soft tap at the bedroom door. What are you doing to my precious? She says, coming in. Donna Isabel takes care of the baby while Minerva's in class. She's one of those pretty women who stay pretty no matter how old they get. Curly white hair like a frilly cap and eyes soft as opals. She holds out her hands, my precious, are they torturing you? What do you mean? Minerva says, handing the howling bundle over and rubbing her ears. This little tyrant's torturing us. 1957, Friday evening, July 26th, the Capitol. I have been a disaster diary keeper. Last year, only one entry, and this year is already half over and I haven't jotted down a single word. I did thumb through my old diary book, and I must say, it does all seem very silly with all the diary dears and the so secretive initials no one would be able to decipher in a million years. But I think I will be needing a companion, since from now on, I am truly on my own. Minerva graduates tomorrow and is moving to Monte Cristi to be with Manolo. I am to go home for the rest of the summer, although it's no longer the home I've always known as Mama is building a new house on the main road. In the fall, I am to come back to finish my degree all on my own. I'm feeling very solitary and sad and more jamonita than a hog. Here I am almost 22 years old and not a true love in sight. Saturday night, July 27th, the Capitol. What a happy day today looked to be. Minerva was getting her law degree. The whole Mirabal Reyes Fernandez Gonzalez Tavares clan gathered for the occasion. It was a pretty important day. Minerva was the first person in our whole extended family, minus Manolo, to have gone through university. What a shock, then, when Minerva got handed the law degree but not the license to practice. Here we all thought Al Jeffrey had relented against our family and let Minerva enroll in law school. But really what he was planning all along was to let her study for 5 whole years only to render that degree useless in the end. How cruel. Manolo was furious. I thought he was going to march right up to the podium and have a word with the rector. Minerva took it best of all of us. She said now she'd have even more time to spend with her family. Something in the way she looked at Manolo when she said that tells me there's trouble between them. Sunday evening, July 28th, last night in the Capitol until today, I was planning to go back to Ojo de Agua with Mama since my summer session is also over. But the new house isn't quite done, so it would have been crowded in the old house with Dad and Jaimito and the boys already moved in. Then this morning, Minerva asked me if I wouldn't come to Monte Cristi and help her set up housekeeping. Manolo has rented a little house so they won't have to live with his parents anymore. By now, I know something is wrong between them, so I've agreed to go along. Monday night, July 29th, Monte Cristi. The drive today was horribly tense. Manolo and Minerva kept addressing all their conversation to me, though every once in a while, they'd start discussing something in low voices. It sounded like treasure hunt clues or something. The Indian from the hill has his cave up that road. The eagle has nested in the hollow on the other side of that mountain. I was so happy to have them talking to each other, I played with little Minu in the back seat and pretended not to hear them. We arrived in town mid-afternoon and stopped in front of this little shack. Seriously, it isn't half as nice as the house Minerva showed me. Where Papa kept that woman on the farm. I suppose it's the best Manolo can do, given how broke they are. I tried not to look too shocked so as not to depress Minerva. What a performance that one put on. Like this was her dream house or something. 1, 2, 3 rooms, she counted them as if delighted. A zinc roof would be so nice when it rained. What a big yard for her garden and that long storage shed in back sure would come in handy. The show was lost on Manolo, though. Soon after he unpacked the car, he took off. Business, he said when Minerva asked him where he was going. Thursday night, August 15th, Monte Cristi, Manolo has been staying out till all hours. I sleep in the front room that serves as his office during the day, so I always know when he comes in. Later, I hear voices raised in their bedroom. Tonight, Minerva and I were sewing curtains in the middle room where the kitchen, living, dining room, and everything is. The clock struck 8, and still no Manolo. I don't know why it is that when the clock strikes, you feel all the more the absence of someone. Suddenly, I heard this racking sob. My brave Minerva. It was all I could do not to start crying right along with her. From her playpen Minerva reached out, offering her mother my old doll I'd given her. Okay, I said. I know something is going on, I said. I took a guess. Another woman, right? Minerva gave me a quick nod. I could see her shoulders heaving up and down. I hate men, I said, mostly trying to convince myself. I really hate them. Sunday afternoon, August 25th. God, it gets hot and MC Manolo and Minerva are on the mend. I'm on the baby to give them time together, and they go out walking, holding hands, like newlyweds. Some nights they slip away from meetings, and I can see lights on in the storage shed. I usually take the baby down to Manolo's parents and spend the time with them and the twins, then walk home, accompanied by Manolo's brother, Eduardo. I keep my distance from him. First time I've ever done that with a nice enough, handsome enough young man. Like I said, I've had enough of them. Saturday morning, September 7th, a new warm feeling has descended on our little house. This morning, Minerva came into the kitchen to get Manolo his cafecito, and her face was suffused with a certain sweetness. She wrapped her arms around me from behind and whispered in my ear, "Thank you, mate, thank you. The struggles brought us together again. You've brought us together again." "Me?" I asked, though I could as easily have said, "What struggle?" Saturday before sunrise, September 28th, this will be a long entry. Something important has finally happened to me. I've hardly slept a wink, and tomorrow, or really, today, since it's almost dawn, I'm heading back to the capital for the start of fall classes. Minerva finally convinced me that I should finish my degree. But after what happened to her, I'm pretty disillusioned about staying at the university. Anyhow, as always before a trip, I was tossing and turning, packing and unpacking my bags in my head. I must have finally fallen asleep because I had that dream again about Papa. This time, after pulling out all the pieces of the wedding dress, I looked in and man after man I'd known appeared and disappeared before my eyes. The last one being Papa, though even as I looked, he faded little by little, until the box was empty. I woke up with a start, lit the lamp, and sat listening to the strange excited beating in my heart. But soon, what I thought was my heartbeat was a desperate knocking on the front shutter. A voice was whispering urgently, "Open up." When I got the courage to crack open the shutter, at first I couldn't make out who was out there. "What do you want?" I asked in a real uninviting way. The voice hesitated. "Wasn't this the home of Manolo Tavares?" "He's Alcib. I'm his wife's sister. Can I help you?" By now, from the light streaming from my window, I could see a face I seemed to recall from a dream. It was the sweetest man's face I'd ever seen. "He had a delivery to make," he said. "Could I please let him in?" As he spoke, he kept looking over his shoulder at a car parked right before our front door. I didn't even think twice. I ran to the entryway, slid the bolt, and pushed open the door just in time for him to carry a long wooden crate from the trunk of the car to the front hall. Quickly, I closed the door behind him and nodded towards the office. He carried the box in, looking all around for a place to hide it. We finally settled on the space under the cot where I slept. It amazed me even as it was happening how immediately I'd fallen in with the stranger's mission, whatever it was. Then he asked me the strangest thing. Was I Mariposa's little sister? I told him I was Minerva's sister. I left out the little, mind you. He studied me, trying to decide something. "You aren't one of us, are you?" I didn't know what us he was talking about, but I knew right then and there, I wanted to be a part of whatever he was. After he left, I couldn't sleep for thinking about him. I went over everything I could remember about him and scolded myself for not having noticed if there was a ring on his hand. But I knew that even if he was married, I would not give him up. Right then, I began to forgive Papa. A little while ago, I got up and dragged that heavy box out from under. It was nailed shut, but the nails had some give on one side where I could work the lid loose a little. I held the light up close and peered in. I almost dropped that lamp when I realized what I was looking at, enough guns to start a revolution. Morning, leaving soon, Manolo and Minerva have explained everything. A national underground is forming. Everyone and everything has a code name. Manolo is Enriquillo, after the great Taino chieftain, and Minerva, of course, is Mariposa. If I were to say tennis shoes, you'd know we were talking about ammunition. The pineapples for the picnic are the grenades. The goat must die for us to eat at the picnic. Get it? It's like a trick language. There are groups all over the island. It turns out Palomino, the man last night, is really an engineer working on projects throughout the country, so he's the natural to do the traveling and deliveries between groups. I told Minerva and Manolo right out, I wanted to join. I could feel my breath coming short with the excitement of it all. But I masked it in front of Minerva. I was afraid she'd get all protective and say that I could be just as useful sewing bandages to put in the supply boxes to be buried in the mountains. I don't want to be babied anymore. I want to be worthy of Palomino. Suddenly, all the boys I've known with soft hands and easy lives seem like the pretty dolls I've outgrown and passed on to Manu. Monday morning, October 24th, the capital, I've lost all interest in my studies. I just go to classes in order to keep my cover as a second-year architecture student. My true identity now is Mariposa, number 2, waiting daily, hourly, for communications from up north. I've moved out of Don Escholito's with the excuse that I need more privacy to apply myself to my work. It's really not a lie, but the work I'm doing isn't what she imagines. My cell has assigned me, along with Sonia, also a university student, to this apartment above a little commerce store. We're a hub, which means that deliveries coming into the capital from up north are dropped off here. And guess who brings them? My Palomino. How surprised he was the first time he knocked, and I opened the door. The apartment is in a humble part of town where the poor students live. I think some of them can tell what Sonia and I are up to, and they look out for us. Certainly some must think the worst, what with men stopping by at all hours. I always make them stay for as long as a cafecito to give the illusion that they are real visitors. I'm a natural for this, really. I've always liked men, receiving them, paying them attention, listening to what they have to say. Now I can use my talents for the revolution. But I have eyes for one man only, my Palomino. Tuesday evening, October 15th, what a way to spend my 22nd birthday. If only Palomino would come tonight with a delivery. I've been a little mopey, I admit it. Sonia reminds me we have to make sacrifices for the revolution. Thank you, Sonia. I'm sure this is going to come up in my critica at the end of the month. God, it seems like I'll always have a Minerva by my side being a better person than I am. Anyhow, I've got to memorize this diagram before we bum the master. Illustration, a light bulb wire to a clock. Thursday night, November 7th, today we had a surprise visitor. We were in the middle of making diagrams to go with the nipples kits when there was a knock at our door. Believe me, Sonia and I both jumped like one of the paper bombs had gone off. We've got an escape route rigged up a back window, but Sonia kept her wits about her and asked who it was. It was Dona Hita, our landlady, dropping in from downstairs for a little visit. We were so relieved, we didn't think to clear off the table with the diagrams. I'm still worried she might have spotted our work, but Sonia says that woman has a different kind of contraband in mind. She hinted that if Sonia and I ever get into trouble, she knows someone who can help us. I blushed so dark Dona Hita must have been baffled that this you-know-who was embarrassed at the mention of you-know-what. Thursday afternoon, November 14th, Palomino has been showing up brilliantly and not always with a delivery to make. We talk and talk. Sonia always makes an excuse and goes out to run an errand. She's really a much nicer person than I've made out. Today she left a little bowl of arrows conlush, ahem, for us to eat. It's a fact, you'll marry the one you share it with. The funniest thing. Donahita bumped into Palomino on the stairs and called him Don Juan. She assumes he's her pimp because he's the one who comes around all the time. I laughed when he told me. But truly, my face was burning at the thought. We hadn't yet spoken of our feelings for each other. Suddenly, he got all serious, and those beautiful hazel eyes came closer and closer. He kissed me, polite and introductory at first. Oh God, I am so deeply in love. Saturday night, November 16th, Palomino came again today. We finally exchanged real names, though I think he already knew mine. Leandro Guzman Rodriguez, what a pretty ring it has to it. We had a long talk about our lives. We laid them side by side and looked at them. It turns out his family is from San Francisco, not far from where I lived with Deed while I was finishing up secondary school. 4 years ago he came to the capital to finish a doctorate. That's just when I had come to start my studies. We must have danced back to back at the Merengue Festival in 54. He was there, I was there. We sat back, marveling. And then our hands reached out, palm to palm, joining our lifelines. Sunday night, December 1st, Palomino stayed last night, on a cot in the munitions room, of course. I didn't sleep a wink just knowing we were under the same roof. Guess whose name was in my right shoe all day? He won't come again for a couple of weeks, training up in the mountains, something like that, he can't really say. Then his next delivery will be the last. By the end of the month this location has to be vacated. There have been too many raids in this area, and Manolo is worried. The munitions room, by the way, is what we've started calling the back room where we keep all deliveries and where, by the way, I keep you, wedged between a beam and the casing of the door. I better not forget you there when we move out. I can just see Donahita finding you, opening your covers, thinking she'll discover a whole list of clients, and instead, Lord forbid, snapping her eyes on the nipples bomb. Maybe she'll think it's some sort of abortion contraption. For the 100th time in the last few months I've wondered whether I shouldn't burn you. Sunday afternoon, December 15th this weekend has been harder than the last 2 months put together. I'm too nervous even to write. Palomino has not appeared as I expected. And there is no one to talk to as Sonia has already left for La Romana. I'll be going home in a few days, and all deliveries and pickups have to be made before I leave. I suppose I'm getting cold feet. Everything has gone without a scrape for months, and I'm sure something will happen now. I keep thinking Donahita reported the grenade diagrams we left out in the open that time she surprised us. Then I worry that Sonia's been nabbed leaving town, and I'll be ambushed when my last delivery comes. I'm a bundle of nerves. I never was any good at being brave all by myself. Monday morning, December 16th, I wasn't expecting Palomino last night, and so when I heard a car pulling up in front of the building, I thought, this is it. I was ready to escape out the back window, diary in hand, but thank God, I ran to the front one to check first. It was him. I took the stairs two at a time and rushed into the street and hugged and kissed him like the kind of woman the neighbors think I am. We piled up the boxes he'd brought in the back room, and then we stood a moment, a strange sadness in our eyes. This work of destruction jarred with what was in our hearts. That's when he told me that he didn't like the idea of my being alone in the apartment. He was spending every moment too worried about me to pay careful enough attention to the revolution. My heart stirred to hear him say so. I admit that for me love goes deeper than the struggle, or maybe what I mean is, love is the deeper struggle. I would never be able to give up Leandro to some higher ideal the way I feel Minerva and Manolo would each other if they had to make the supreme sacrifice. And so last night, it touched me, oh so deeply, to hear him say it was the same for him, too. 1958, the day of lovers, February 14th county morning, here's hoping for rain. Blessings on my marriage bed, as Mama always says. Dona Mercedes Reyes Fiuda Mirabal announces the wedding of her daughter Maria Teresa Mirabal Reyes to Leandro Guzman Rodriguez, son of Don Leandro Guzman and Dona Ana Rodriguez de Guzman on Saturday, February 14th, is 1958th year of our Lord, 28th year of the era of Trujillo at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, San Juan Evangelista Church, Salgado, Mariposa and Palomino, for now. Maria Teresa and Leandro, forever.